Good evening. You're listening to KVNF, and this is Local Motion, your weekly source for what's happening in your world here on the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. While elections across the state this year weren't necessarily as contentious as those in 2012, there were issues on both the statewide ballot and local ballots throughout Colorado that touched directly on voters' daily lives. Funding for schools and Colorado's newly legalized retail marijuana industry were the hotly debated issues on the statewide ballot. While across the state and in western Colorado, local tax increases were proposed for everything from funding libraries and fire protection services to discouraging people from drinking sugary beverages. But despite the variety of issues at stake across the region, at the core of some local ballot measures was a question of whether to increase taxes. Coloradans by a large margin voted down Amendment 66, the measure to bring in around $950 million in new tax revenue to fund public schools. And while voters did approve new taxes on Colorado's budding retail marijuana industry, a handful of local tax increases were voted down here in western Colorado. For this episode of Local Motion, we'll take a look at a couple of the failed tax initiatives here in our part of the state and hear from people who have either been directly involved in the debates over those measures or have been following them through the lens of the media. We'll also hear about new local taxes on retail marijuana that were approved by voters in nearby Carbondale. And lastly, we'll skip over to the Front Range to hear the latest on the still undecided fate of a proposed fracking moratorium in Broomfield, Colorado. Thanks for joining us today. First, a look at the failed initiative in Delta County to raise property taxes to fund the county's library system. For some background on that issue and what it means for the future of the libraries, I talked to Library District Director Annette Chozik. Can you start off our conversation by telling me exactly what this proposed funding measure was all about and what it was supposed to do for the libraries in Delta County?
The short version is that since 2008, there have been some decreases in property value in our county, and our library district is primarily funded by property taxes. Mm-hmm. So if the values go down, then our revenues that we receive go down. And so this initiative was about raising the percentage that we collect so that we would be able to have more revenue on the property taxes.
And were there any specific projects in mind to use with this funding source, or was this sort of a way to maintain funding for the libraries?
This was a way to not only maintain our buildings and our programs and our services, but also address the growth that we've had in the use of our libraries, but not a special project per se.
What has that growth looked like?
Well, we've had in the past few years consistently between 10 to 20% growth in use each year. And so there's a lot more traffic in our libraries, a lot more people using the libraries, and so that accounts for many kinds of things, as you might imagine. They're checking out more things, they're using more computers, all of that kind of use.
So as director for the library district, I'm sure we already know the answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Were you surprised by the outcome of the election with the measure being voted down?
The way I look at elections is they can always go either way. I think this year was particularly difficult, and I know this is true not just here. Other library issues in the state were also defeated, as were some local school issues. The state librarian felt that some of that had to do with a negative voter turnout regarding number 66, which was a statewide initiative, that many no voters came out for that. They may have also voted no on other tax questions as well. And so, you know, it could be that, it could be the economy, the mine layoffs, people being a little bit unsure about how the economy is going to go. So you never know, really.
Yeah, there were some other local and regional ballot issues dealing with tax increases to fund things like fire protection and Telluride. Of course, the much-contested soda tax debate was also rejected. That measure was rejected. But when it comes to the libraries question here in Delta County, there wasn't really an organized opposition campaign.
No.
I'm just wondering if you were sort of surprised by that, to see it rejected, given that we didn't have an organized campaign out there speaking against the measure.
I think a lot of people maybe were surprised, but I think considering our economy here and the amount of anti-tax sentiment, I think you have to always be prepared. And that's how I looked at it from the beginning.
So what does this mean going forward for the libraries, both in the near term and in the long term?
Well, in the near term, people maybe picked up our fact sheets, but we will have to do reductions in hours and service and what we can do. We just won't be able to do as much because we'll have less money to do it. Our board will be considering all of our options for the future. There's always the possibility later of going back to the voters, but that will be up to our, you know, our board to assess when that timing would be or what we would do at that point. But right now, we just will have to build a budget for next year that takes into account less revenue.
When you say less hours, do you mean less employee hours or actually less open hours for
libraries?
Less
open hours and probably less employee hours as well.
You sort of hinted at this, but do you have any idea of whether the district is already moving forwards with plans to regroup and try to pass a similar measure?
Well, there's no plan at this point. It would be something, of course, a library board or any board running an organization has to look at those options, but there's nothing in place right now at all.
I've been joined by Annette Chozik. She's the director for the Delta County Library District. Annette, thanks so much for talking to us.
You're very welcome.
Another local ballot measure in our region that generated a lot of discussion was the proposed tax on sugary and sweetened beverages in Telluride. The so-called soda tax was initiated by a group called Kick the Can Telluride and would have placed a 1% per fluid ounce tax on some sugary and sweetened beverages sold in the town. The measure also drew in a huge sum of campaign contributions to both sides of the debate. It was estimated the tax would have drawn in around $200,000 in new tax revenue, with that money going towards scholarships and physical fitness programs designed for the area's kids. Opponents said the tax would place an unjustified burden on local businesses and was in general an overreach of government policies on individual behavior. Voters apparently sided with those latter arguments as the measure was voted down by a large margin of 69%. Telluride station KOTO spoke to representatives for both sides of the debate after the results were announced last week. Bob Harnish, the manager for the campaign opposing the tax, hailed the victory.
The Telluride voters have spoken. They now join residents in cities across the country in saying no to discriminatory and unnecessary taxes. This is a victory for all of us here in Telluride, for customers who are smart enough to decide what's best for themselves and their families, and for small businesses that would have been hurt by this tax. While we commend the city of Telluride for its commitment to health and wellness, this is not the way to achieve such goals.
Meanwhile, Bridget Tadanio, co-founder of Kick the Can Telluride, said she still sees some positive in the outcome.
You know, of course, when I heard that ballot issue 2A hadn't passed, I was profoundly disappointed and pretty frustrated. But then after thinking about it for a while and commiserating and verbal processing with some of the other women in our campaign, we decided that we're kind of victorious no matter what, because there are conversations happening around Telluride now about the unique harms of consuming sugar in excess. And I don't know that those conversations were happening in Telluride before ballot issue 2A existed.
Telluride Daily Planet editor Katie Klingsporn has been following the measure since it was first proposed and joined us earlier today to talk about the debate, the election, and the outcome. Katie, we've been reading reports about the large sums of money being funneled into the debate over this measure since it was first proposed. From your perspective, was this an unprecedented amount of outside influence in a local ballot initiative for the town?
In my experience, $10,000 is a lot of money for an election campaign. With this sugar tax, the total as of mid-October reporting was $125,000 for both the Yes on 2A and the No on 2A campaigns, which is huge.
And how much of an effect do you think that outside money had on both of those campaigns?
Well, it obviously gave them a huge voice. Lots of mailers, ads in the newspaper, signs, events. They were both very, very visual. But I think what it did is it really turned off a lot of voters on both sides of the issue. People did not like that these outside entities were trying to influence the vote in Telluride.
By that, do you mean they didn't vote in the elections because of that, or they were swayed one way or the other because of that?
I'm not sure if they were swayed one way or the other. What I heard mostly was kind of discussed that all this money was being spent to advertise when really what the ultimate goal of the campaign was to raise a tax for these programs that need to be funded. And I heard a lot of people say, you know, if all of this ad money could have gone into these children's programs, it would have been much better spent.
With or without the money, do you think that either side had a louder voice in this debate?
I actually don't. I think they were both equally as loud. And actually, the No campaign, as far as we know, we haven't looked at the final financial reports, but they had more money last time I checked. But the Yes campaign was really visual and really loud and vocal starting in like August. Or maybe even July. So they, over the long term, probably had more of a voice. Yes campaign did.
So 59% of voters in San Miguel County followed the statewide trend and rejected Amendment 66.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that voters had similar reasons for voting against that tax measure as they did for rejecting the proposed sugary beverages tax?
You know, I think what happened here, anyways, is that there was just a lot of tax measures on the ballot. We had another local measure, 1A, which would have raised money for greenhouse gas reduction programs, and that also failed by a lot. And I think here it was a matter of people seeing too many tax proposals and just saying no on everything.
We heard earlier from Bridget Tadonio, one of the co-founders of Kick the Can Telluride, the group behind the proposed tax increase. She says even though the measure failed, its appearance on the ballot has started this conversation about diet and health in Telluride that otherwise wouldn't have happened, and she says that's still a victory. Have you been hearing that same feeling expressed from supporters?
Yeah, I mean, Bridget told me that, and I've heard that from other people, and, you know, I think it's true. I think that it's easy to think of Telluride as healthy because we have a lot of recreation and people are really active here. And on the surface, it does look a lot healthier. But yeah, I think it got people really thinking about sweetened beverages and liquid calories and the whole, it kind of kicked off a dialogue about obesity and public health.
And what are you hearing from opponents of the measure after the outcome?
They are very happy. They are thanking the community for protecting the businesses of the town, and it's mostly a, you know, our businesses were threatened by this measure more than anything is what I'm hearing.
So some economic concerns sort of drove those no votes.
Yes. Kind of the word on the street was it was going to be too hard on the businesses.
Are there any indications that supporters of the measure are going to try to push any kind of similar legislation next time around?
I haven't heard anything.
I've been joined on the line by Katie Klingspern. She's the editor at the Telluride Daily Planet. Thanks so much for joining us, Katie.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Motion here on KVNF, and we're taking a look back at the results of some local ballot initiatives from this year's election, talking to reporters and people involved with those issues about how people voted and why, and what the outcomes mean for us here in Western Colorado. We travel now to Carbondale, where voters last week approved a local sales and excise tax on retail marijuana. Those taxes, 5% for each, will now be added onto the statewide excise tax of 15% and 10% sales tax on retail marijuana approved by voters under Proposition AA. I'm joined on the line now by Eric Skalak. He's the news director at KD&K in Carbondale. Eric, you and your staff have been following the issue of retail marijuana in your part of Western Colorado, and in fact, we spoke a few months ago about the state of things here in the KVNF listening area when it comes to retail pot. I want to ask you about the new pot taxes that Carbondale voters approved last week, but first off, let's back up and tell me, what is the status of retail marijuana in Carbondale? Has the town decided to allow the new industry?
Yes, Carbondale has. In fact, they passed new regulations a couple of months ago allowing basically 5 retail stores, 5 testing facilities, 5 manufacturing facilities, and 5 grow operations. So they are definitely going to allow the recreational marijuana industry in Carbondale.
Are there currently medical marijuana shops in Carbondale?
There are. There are 3 medical marijuana shops.
And do you know of those 3, how many of them, if any, have started applying for retail licenses?
Yeah, you know, we don't know for sure yet. We've spoken to a few of those current marijuana shops, and they told us and have told other local media that they're planning to apply for recreational licenses while continuing their medical operations as well.
So can you give us a general overview of what this new tax on retail marijuana in Carbondale is all about?
Sure, yeah. So basically it's a 5% sales tax and a 5% tax on wholesale marijuana. And that's sort of in line with other municipalities in Colorado. It's a little bit more than Boulder and Denver, who had a 3.5% sales tax. And so the funds raised by the taxes will go to the town's enforcement of the recreational marijuana regulations. A little bit will go towards education and healthcare programs, and then it potentially could go to just general town funds as well.
Now, were there campaigns organized either supporting or opposing this measure?
You know, not that we were aware of. It was something that the trustees talked about in their regular meetings, but we didn't really see any community advocating for one or the other. It was a pretty quiet issue around here.
Was the debate also quiet when it came to the proposed statewide taxes on marijuana under Proposition AA?
You know, in Carbondale, I would say that it was. We had a couple of tax questions this election on top of the state questions, and I think people were talking about the general trend of increasing taxes. But yeah, we didn't really see a lot of debate around here about Proposition AA, the state taxes.
So as we know, that measure, Proposition AA, it passed by a large margin at the state level, and in a lot of counties across Colorado, the vote for Garfield County was actually pretty similar to the statewide numbers, with 64% of voters favoring these new excise taxes and sales taxes on pot, and only 26% opposing it. Given that voters approved what's arguably a sizable amount of additional taxes on retail pot sales, both at the state level and then there locally in Carbondale, what do you think this says about the general attitude towards the new marijuana industry in Carbondale?
Well, I think in general, what this shows is that people, while they believe that recreational marijuana should have been legalized and should be a legal industry, I think they recognize that it's going to take money to make that happen. That enforcing the rules, enforcing these regulations, that money has to come from somewhere, and increasing taxes so that they can pay for it, I think people are on board with that.
What have you heard from people in the marijuana industry, either on the medical or retail side? Are they welcoming these new taxes?
Well, I don't know that I'd say they're welcoming the taxes, but I think they also recognize that there is a need for this revenue to pay for enforcement of these regulations. But I think there's a minor concern that if the taxes are too high, that it may push people towards black market sales. But I don't think they see the taxes that were passed as being high enough to actually do that.
Right, and that was the argument at the state level with Proposition AA about why people should oppose these new taxes, is that it might fuel the black market industry. Have you heard from opponents in Carbondale, opposed to the local taxes there?
Not really. I guess, like I said before, that we really didn't hear much on the tax issue. There was a question on our ballots this election about our rural fire protection district increasing taxes, and that was really the big issue on our ballots this year.
That issue was voted down, correct?
It was, yeah. You know, I think a lot of people thought that it would pass just because tax increases for fire departments, those generally get passed. But I don't know. There are only so many taxes that people will approve in one election, I suppose.
Here locally in Delta County, we had the issue of increasing taxes to support our libraries voted down as well. But again, people still approved these marijuana taxes. And I don't know, I get the sense that across the state, with a lot of different local tax initiatives, it seems like marijuana taxes were one of the few things this year that Colorado voters in general were willing to jump on board with.
Yeah, I purely speculating, I think people recognized that they had to come up with a way to pay for enforcement, and this was the way to do it.
Eric Scalak, news director at KDNK, joining us on the line to talk about the results of some local tax initiatives in Carbondale. Carbondale voters approved a new 5% sales tax on marijuana and a new 5% excise tax on retail marijuana. Thanks so much for joining us, Eric.
It was my pleasure, Travis.
And lastly today, we'll look at one local ballot initiative from the Front Range that sought to place a moratorium on the process of fracking in the town of Broomfield. Broomfield was one of four Colorado communities that had anti-fracking measures on the ballot this year, and while these measures might not affect us directly here in western Colorado, they do have implications for the future of oil and gas development in the state and across the country. Three of those measures passed in Boulder, Lafayette, and Fort Collins, but the fracking ban in Broomfield was rejected by voters. At least that's what it looks like so far. The measure there failed only by a few votes. I spoke with Megan Quinn, a reporter for the Broomfield Enterprise, about where the contested outcome stands. So, initial returns from last week showed voters had rejected a five-year ban, or moratorium as it were, on fracking in Broomfield, but that measure lost by a mere 13 votes. Now, you reported last week that a recount of the votes was likely, and in fact, the Secretary of State's office said that margin was small enough that an automatic recount would be justified. So first off, can you just give us a general update on this situation? Is there a recount in the works, and is there any kind of timeline for how it might proceed?
So Broomfield is expected to certify all the ballots sometime this week. And after they certify the ballots that they have, they'll be able to decide whether or not to have a recall or a recount. Really likely that there will be a recount just because 13 ballots is well within that one-half of 1% margin that's needed for an automatic recount, but they're a little hesitant to say that for sure until they get all the provisional ballots and then also, you know, ballots from overseas and things like that. So we're still waiting for them to officially say that there will be a recount, but it's very likely.
Right. And we can hear that news sometime in the next couple of days.
They're expected to certify all the ballots either tomorrow or Thursday, but that might change.
So what are supporters of the fracking ban saying about this outcome, and are they confident that a recount will change the outcome of the vote?
The supporters of the ban, or I guess moratorium, are very confident that this will help them out because they're a grassroots organization. It's a bunch of parents, mostly, that don't have a lot of money behind their campaign, and the vote is still within those 13 votes. They would have asked for a recount regardless of whether it was in that one half of 1% margin. And they're pretty confident that that will help them because it's so close. They're just really looking forward to seeing those hard numbers because they think that really shows that people are behind them in Broomfield, regardless of how contentious the issue is.
Now, tell us more about that grassroots organization. That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, was whether the supporters of this fracking moratorium were tied to any larger organizations, you know, pushing these measures across the state or the country. But you say it's pretty locally sourced from there in Broomfield.
Yeah, so the group is called Our Broomfield. Like I said, it's mostly parents that live in neighborhoods that are nearby either proposed fracking spaces, I guess, or places where fracking is already occurring. So, you know, their kids go to school in the area. They are doing this when they get home from work. You know, they're all just kind of parents that are, they don't want fracking in their neighborhoods because they are concerned about their kids and concerned that there are some health and safety considerations. And as far as I know, when I looked through the campaign finance reports, their contributions come from, you know, their friends, their family members. They don't have any major organizations that are really behind them financially other than other people in their neighborhoods.
What kind of industry opposition are they facing?
There are two organizations in Broomfield that are pro-fracking. It's Our Broomfield 2 is one of the organizations, which is also a citizen organization, and also the Broomfield Balanced Energy Coalition, which is made up of some current and former politicians that have worked in the area. But they are very well-funded. They got about $171,000 from the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. That's a pretty big difference because Our Broomfield, this grassroots organization that's against fracking, got probably about, I think, $4,000 total in campaign contributions. the Colorado Oil and Gas Association poured about $600,000 into efforts to fight fracking moratoriums that were on the ballot in the four cities in Colorado. So, you know, just that it's a lot more money that COGA has put into this to fight these anti-fracking measures.
Are opponents trying to stop this recount from going forward?
Not that I've heard, because it's an automatic recount based on those numbers. There's nothing that they can really do about it.
From what I understand, there's been some question as to whether communities even have the legal jurisdiction to pass these measures. Has that come up as an issue in Broomfield?
Sure. That's a big issue. It's pretty up in the air right now. If a fracking moratorium is enacted in Broomfield, the city and county of Broomfield is pretty ready for this to go to court. No one has officially legally challenged them yet, but there's been a lot of talk about the possibility that this might get challenged in court because of people's mineral rights. We saw this happen in Longmont, which is currently going through some legal challenges. And I know that in Broomfield, some officials are worried that might happen here. But no one's really said anything officially yet because they're all waiting for this recount to happen.
Have you spoken to city officials there in Broomfield? And what's their take on the fracking bans? Are they in opposition to it? Are they supportive of it? What does that look like there?
They've really kind of been waiting to see what the voters are going to say. I know that the city attorney, Bill Tuthill, has said that if a fracking moratorium does pass, he is skeptical about it because of those legal ramifications. I get the sense from him that he does expect there to be some legal opposition, and that seems to be more of his concern right now. Everybody's really waiting to see what the final vote is, so no one will really say anything officially now.
That was Megan Quinn, staff reporter for the Broomfield Enterprise, speaking to us about the fracking moratorium that was voted down there last week, but is now likely to face a recount of the ballots. Thanks for joining us for Local Motion this evening. We've been taking a look at some local and regional ballot initiatives and how they played out this year. Remember, if you missed any of this episode or you'd like to hear old episodes of the program, you can always visit our website at kvnf.org. Stay tuned for The Treatment coming up next.